The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member. And we don't mean your Aunt Dolores.
You stink!
The TNT Shop has it all. At TNTRadio.live. Focused on the facts. Chris Smith on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Some police news that I thought would be of public interest. A man charged with sexually abusing his own daughter has been released on strict bail to live with his veteran police officer father. Yuck. A man accused of repeatedly raping his daughter while he was a preteen is the son of a veteran Sydney police officer, a court has heard. Now, the man, who cannot be named for legal reasons, was arrested in November last year and charged with 25 rape and sexual touching offences after Child Abuse Squad detectives conducted an extensive three-hour interview with his now 13-year-old daughter. Police will allege the teen told officers her father began sexually abusing her when she was 9 years old, while the pair was alone in their Western Sydney home. She claimed the abuse continued for more than 4 years until she eventually disclosed the alleged conduct to close friends and her mother last year. The man, a New South Wales public servant who is now aged 33, spent more than 3 months behind bars on remand before being granted bail by the New South Wales Supreme Court last month to live with his parents. Why would you give him bail, given the seriousness of the charges? The court heard the man's father holds a senior rank in a local area command in the Sydney Basin and has 30 years worth of policing under his belt, which he said would be put to use monitoring his son for compliance with his bail. The father is doing what fathers would do, but he must be awfully ashamed of the alleged abuse. Court documents said the alleged abuse occurred between 2019 and 2023 at times when the girl's mother and brother were both away from the family home. The court heard she disclosed the alleged abuse to her best friend one evening in July last year, saying, "I have been getting sexually assaulted by my dad for the past four years. It is alleged she confided in her boyfriend a few months later, then told her mother, who asked why she hadn't disclosed the alleged assaults earlier. She said, "I just kept hoping he would change," she allegedly responded. Prosecutors opposed the man's release during the bail hearing, noting the victim had been given a detailed and specific account of the alleged assaults during a lengthy interview with police. Given the weight of evidence in this case, and from what sounds like a pretty good believable witness, you'd think that bail would not be granted, but he's been given bail. And maybe the fact that his father's a police officer weighed in his favour. Anthony Albanese has doubled down on claims that opposition leader Peter Dutton has politicised the position of Australian ambassador, pointing to sympathetic comments the opposition leader made 1 month ago in a media interview where he endorsed Kevin Rudd in the role. Speaking to Question Time today, the Prime Minister raised comments from Mr. Dutton last month when he told Sky News he thought the former Labor Prime Minister was representing Australia well in the position and that he would not seek to replace him if he became Prime Minister. Adding to his earlier answer, Mr. Albanese said the position should be beyond the sort of cheap politics we saw earlier today. Responding to the statement, Mr. Dutton then sought leave to make a personal statement claiming to have been misrepresented by Mr. Albanese. Mr. Dutton explained he had previously had complimentary things to say about Mr. Rudd, given it was in Australia's national interest for him to be successful in the role. However, Mr. Dutton said Mr. Rudd must respond to very serious comments and called for him to repair his relationship with Donald Trump, given he could be re-elected as president after Mr. Trump called him nasty and not the brightest bulb today. They need to be answered, and Mr. Rudd needs to repair the relationship, Mr. Dutton said. That's the point we are making, and we won't be intimidated by these bully boys over there. When the government's Australian ambassador is dressed down like Rudd was in that interview with Nigel Farage by Donald Trump, well, it's a good day for the opposition. This is Chris Smith on TNT.
Going 360 on the headlines.
It's really well-balanced conversation.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Now, don't forget, we are in or on Cyber Wednesday, which means later this hour, we will be catching up with the one and only Alex Zaharoff-Reut, and we'll be talking about some of the big tech and cyber news today, including this amazing joint venture between Google and Apple. Now, I don't know whether you understand this, but Apple rarely has a joint venture against a body or a corporation that would be described as a competitor. Google is clearly a competitor to Apple. They're now competing in terms of smartphones as well. But they're in a joint venture, and Alex is going to describe that a little later in the program. So we'll get to him then. As I said, former leader of the UK Brexit Party, Nigel Farage, had that one-on-one with Donald Trump. My next guest will also have something to say about the way Trump dressed down Rudd. And it'll be interesting to hear what Jason says. Now, Jason has had an extensive career, for those who mightn't know, in the media. It started with 2GB back in 1989 at the age of 17 as a newsroom cadet. In 98, he was appointed director of news at 2GB and remains the youngest person to have ever held that position. He was the director of 7 News Sydney for almost 8 years until his departure in June 2023. And I have worked with him side by side on shows on 2GB as well. He joins us live from Sydney. Jason Morrison, welcome to TNT.
Hey, Chris. G'day. How are you?
Very well. I've never asked you about those early years. What, just bear with us for a second, but at 17, to walk into a place like 2GB, which was seen as the grandfather of radio, it was such an iconic, great media brand. But to be there at 17 years of age, you must have thought you'd achieved your goals already at that very young age.
Couldn't believe it. You know, I think often about it. It's kind of weird how your mind goes back there just when you're having a bad day and you think, you know, life's not really surmounted much. And you think, oh, actually, I've been doing this for a while now. And I remember the day I got the job, it almost felt a little bit like a bit of a movie scene as I look back on it. I kind of walked out of 2GB in Sussex Street and ran down the road in glee. I couldn't believe it. I'd listened to that station since I was a kid. I'd been one of these kind of, you know, talkback dorks as a teenager. And I'd never ever dreamt I'd ever get there. And to be 17, just, you know, finished year 12 and have a job at the joint, the radio station, not just the one that everyone listened to, but the one I'd always listened to and always dreamt of being a part of. And this will amuse a lot of people. At the time, the guy I was working around, the big star at 2GB, was Mike Carlton. Yeah. And, you know, though Mike and I would fiercely disagree on a lot of things, in fact, I doubt he'd even have a clue who I was these days, but one of the things that I admired, he's just such a great broadcaster. You know, what came out of the mouth, even if you disagreed with it, how it came out was magnificent. Mm. And to work with people of that caliber and greater as it went on through the careers, you know, into the era that you and I got to work together with Jones and Hadley and others, and Laws at TUE as well. It's just remarkable, and I feel so blessed. And even if I never get another go at doing it, it's been incredible to date.
Yeah. And you know, those that are in key positions at that radio station should not underestimate the value of that brand to people, you know, not just to people like you and I who've had a chance to work there, but, you know, you've got to value the brand and not besmirch the brand. And I just think there have been some that have walked in there that have besmirched the brand. And I don't think we should look too fondly on them, because this is just a very special part of, you know, the life of Sydneysiders.
Well, long-time listeners to radio in Australia would probably know the name John Pearce. And John Pearce was, you know, in terms of talk radio, he was a genuine pioneer. Mm. He was doing talking on radio when people were, you know, playing music only and did nothing more than it. He didn't go first into talkback. In fact, he thought talkback radio was crap, but he thought talking into the audience was a real gift, to be able to do that and to hold a conversation and interviews and things like that. Anyway, John, in the latter parts of his career, was still working at GB, and I got to work with him there. I remember him looking at me and saying, you're very young to work here, you know, and to be allowed on the air at your age. I mean, I was doing news when I was 17. I couldn't vote, and I'm telling people about politics. It's bizarre as I look back on it. And he said to me, you know, never forget this radio station and its deep history. And, you know, 2GB is approaching 100 years old, which, you know, in terms of broadcasting around the world, it's a grand old station. Yeah. And though the letters don't stand for greater broadcasting, they stand for something else. I never forgot it. And every time I was ever given the chance to be on it, I think that I am on the greatest radio station in this country. And I still think of it as that. And, you know, I mean, my day every day involves somehow touching it, listening to it, being a part of it, even though I don't work there anymore. And I'm sure you're probably pretty much the same. It's an important, you know, organ in our city.
Mm. Good stuff. All right. Let's talk about Nigel Farage's interview. Let's play this again. I can play it 100 times because I enjoy it so much. But Donald Trump obviously knows all about Kevin Rudd. Have a listen again.
The AUKUS deal that's in place on nuclear submarines, America, you know, the UK, Australia, very, very important deal. It's there to try and combat that huge growth, naval growth in China. But now, of course, things have changed in Australia. We've got a Labour government in Australia. The previous ambassador, Joe Hockey, I think was quite a good friend of yours. You got on pretty well with him. Now they've appointed Kevin Rudd, former Labour MP. I mean, he has said the most horrible things. You were a destructive president, a traitor to the West. And he's now Australia's ambassador in Washington.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
Would you take a phone call from him?
He won't be there long if that's the case. I don't know much about him. I heard he was a little bit nasty. I hear he's not the brightest bulb, but I don't know much about him. But if he's at all hostile, he will not be there long.
Well, Nigel Farage probably told Trump something that he didn't know, that he was nasty, and he said a lot of bad things about Donald Trump. It won't take much for Trump to demand of the Australian government to remove their ambassador, will it?
Well, he shouldn't be there anyway, let's be frank. Even most people in cabinet don't think that Rudd should be there. He was a captain's pick. I hate the phrase, but he was genuinely Albanese's pick. Most people I know in the Canberra establishment were stunned that Kevin Rudd was given that opportunity. And it probably goes very close to the heart of how much Albanese was a part of making sure that Kevin Rudd became Prime Minister again. Because remember, you know, people think Kevin Rudd was Prime Minister. He was Prime Minister twice. Rudd Gillard Rudd. He had to defeat her in order to get there. And history will tell you Albanese was a big part of that, a very big part of that. So, okay, let's look at why he is there anyway. He's there because I think Albanese probably figured out there's one way to keep Kevin quiet, and that's to keep him busy. Because he can be a thorough pain in the ass, and everyone has known that in every corner of politics. So he shouldn't be there. He wasn't a diplomatic choice. We just come off the back of someone who, you know, I think stunned Australia as to how good he was in that job in Joe Hockey. People probably were just thinking another political stooge over in Australia's greatest diplomatic post. I mean, we did the same with Brandis in London at the same time. So, you know, to have someone who, like Hockey, managed to, you know, infiltrate the Rudd camp and actually become like the preferred diplomat of the allies in Washington was a huge thing. And so, you know, they almost would have been better off begging Hockey to stay.
Yeah, or Arthur Sinodinos was the last one, wasn't he? Arthur Sinodinos, I thought he had some health problems, but I thought he did a remarkable job too.
Yeah. But there was absolutely no chance Kevin was going to deliver like those other two, and particularly Hockey. So he shouldn't be there. It was a bad choice. It's going to turn out to be an even worse choice. And look, even if it is, you know, who knows where it's going to go? Maybe Trump doesn't get elected. It actually shouldn't matter. It shouldn't be clear to our closest, dearest ally that we have people sitting in diplomatic posts who have polarizing views and don't mind spruiking them about the political leadership of the country that we're meant to be getting on with. Because, you know, Australia is in a bit of strife if the United States is not in its corner.
Yeah. But apart from the hate between them, and obviously Trump now hates Rudd, but Rudd has always hated Trump, putting that aside, if you're trying to send someone over there to represent the country and they don't actually get on with the person that runs the country, it's a waste of time.
Yeah. And you knew it before they left the country. It's not like he got over there and put his foot in it and somehow mysteriously the messages got out. They knew before he went over there that he had had a hell of a lot to say, not just about Trump, but also about Rupert Murdoch, also about a whole lot of figures in Australian politics. The diplomatic post is meant to be the finest, you know, outlet of the Australian government abroad, and it's not. And you've got a bloke that even in Australia, a lot of people on his own side have got no time for. They plonked him there. Albanese's issue always has been judgment, poor judgment. He just sort of, when you expect it to be quite straightforward for someone who's been in the game for as long as he has, he surprises you about how naive he actually is. Mm. This is another example of it, and a bad one. And I saw, I think this morning, it might have been Matt Canavan. Actually, I heard him on radio, funnily enough, on 2GB. And he was talking about this issue. And Canavan made the point, now put aside politics, we want, for the sake of Australia, to have someone that the United States can feel hugely, hugely confident in sharing confidential, strategic things with. Rudd is a known leaker. He's a known chameleon with the media. He's always playing. And you can see it today because even, you know, this is the farce of it. You've got the likely alternative president of the United States, the likely, you know, bloke who's going to win it, saying, don't want anything to do with this guy, in as much words. And there are still people in Australia, in the media, funnily enough, who are defending Rudd. And go through and have a look at them. I mean, a fair few of them happen to sit at one or two newspapers that Rudd used for many, many years to get back at people. Mm. But they're out there sort of saying, oh, you know, how dare he, Trump, tell Australia who should or shouldn't be the diplomatic agent over there. Well, I got news for you. You actually have to be approved by the country you're going
to.
Yes. It's not just a we'll put over there who we want. It's got to be, here's our suggested person. We hope you accept them.
Yeah, yeah. It'll all come undone, I predict, come November. Got to take a quick break, mate. We'll be back in just 2 minutes and we'll talk about tax and a couple of other things, including schools, with Jason Morrison right here on TNT.
TNT's Jason Allborn.
What that sneaky World Health Organization, that private organization linked to the United Nations, is planning to do to take away yours and my medical sovereignty. Or pretending that they're not going to, of course, because it just so happens that they have got the ability to look into a crystal ball, see around corners, and tell us that there is yet another virus or disease or sickness coming for us, and the only way that we survive it is to do exactly what Tedros tells us to do, even though the man's not even a doctor. Can't even tell his own Ethiopian country on 3 separate occasions, goodness me, that they have had a cholera outbreak. Cholera characterized by acute watery diarrhea that, if not diagnosed correctly, can result in death. Well, on 3 occasions, Tedros's answer was, we didn't have good enough testing or testing available, so we didn't really know that it was cholera. That's the guy who's leading the world.
Weekends with Jason Allborn on today's News Talk, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk Radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT Radio listeners rely on TNT Radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. Today's News Talk Radio.
Come on, let the man talk.
We never censor our hosts.
Good. Now, talk.
Uncensored news.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
It is very uncensored here at TNT, which is the way we like it. Thank you, Barbara, for a lovely comment just posted on our chat box, which you can find and also contribute to on tntradio.live. It says, Chris, just love your show. Avid listener, just love you. Thank you, Barbara. I love you too. And congratulations on giving the others the flick, or they gave me the flick too. Well done on your rehab. You go okay. Just wondering if Alan Jones is coming back. Well, Alan's got a whole heap on his plate at the moment, but in particular some health problems, which has been well publicised. We discussed this at the beginning of the year. He knew this was all coming up, so he's not part of the program for this year. But who knows? Barbara, never say never. Never say never. And she's also following ADH.TV as well. Good on you, Barbara. Thank you very much for that. All right, Jason Morrison, New South Wales Treasurer Daniel Mookie has called for an overhaul of the taxation system. Good luck with that. The state moves to petition the Commonwealth Government to reform the absurd billion-dollar GST carve-up. Just another New South Wales Treasurer saying the usual. New South Wales is receiving $310 million less in this year's carve-up. Victoria has been given an extra $3.7 billion because Albo wants to save his Labor mates in Victoria, who are drastically in debt. Remember how the Howard government sold the GST with Unchain My Heart ads back in the year 2000? It was flawed from the start, the GST. And the other flaw in the GST process is the fact that the black market of cash has just swollen, and everyone knows it's swollen.
Yeah, it's huge. And look, anyone who's in small business knows that the business activity statement that's meant to help the tax office keep a watch on the amount of tax that you're collecting on their behalf that you get no benefit whatsoever for. They don't thank you even or give you a discount in your tax. It's just like, gimme, or I fine you. The thing that I find most extraordinary about it is that the reform of the tax system and reform in inverted commas stopped in 2000 once they got the GST through.
Yeah,
nothing changed.
It did.
And reform of it just meant finding a new way to tax us. And it's been quite successful. It's managed to get its hands on lots of things that previously before. So the tax take in Australia is far greater. But this is it. Okay, the state treasurers, this year it's New South Wales. Last year it was Victoria. It was Western Australia before that. They're always complaining that their breakup is just simply not enough. You've got to have a look at how this whole thing's worked out. And without boring people about how the GST split up all works, the 10% is meant to go to the states, and it goes into, essentially trust. And then the Grants Commission helps the Commonwealth of Australia figure out which way it goes. It's all meant to be independent, stacked full of academics and lifelong public servants and whatever. I mean, people who probably lack a bit of worldliness, but it's a 25-year-old equation. You know, in 2000, when kind of went through, think about Australia in 2000. I mean, New South Wales had the Olympic Games on. We didn't care about anything else other than the Games. That's all we cared about. And anyone who lived in New South Wales at the time knew that because everything else fell to crap apart from the Olympic Games. Victoria was in a boom time in 2000. Funnily enough, Western Australia was struggling. The mining boom hadn't really delivered for Western Australia by 2000. So it was howling and carrying on at the time, and rightly so. And South Australia was having its own troubles. So the equations that are within the Grants Commission system of how it figures out where the money goes today, they're pretty old, and there've been tweaks obviously over the years. But Australia today versus 2000 or even 1999, a vastly different country. I mean, little places, satellite cities surround major places. I mean, where I live, for example, I live in the northern part of Sydney. A large part of my group of friends live on the central coast of New South Wales. And 20 years ago, the population of the central coast of New South Wales was substantially smaller than it is today. People have changed. Where people live has changed. Country towns have boomed. Coffs Harbour, for example, a city halfway between Sydney and Brisbane, Butte Place, and has grown exponentially. So all these pressures have changed. And the old Grants Commission thing that was put together in the Howard years with the premiers of the day, I think Kennett or Brax or Carr or people like that, all these people, they're all long gone. I mean, they're political retirees on the pension. So you've got this sort of situation where we're still playing with a very, very old equation.
Yeah.
For a country that has changed markedly, not just in the way it socially is, but in population as well. And it's changed incredibly. And we're still sitting on the old formula. And there's your problem. And you'll never be able to. And in places like New South Wales and Victoria, where the population's huge, you can never keep up with the infrastructure backlog because anyone coming from another land comes to one of those two places.
Yeah, they do.
There are not many that fly into Australia from the Middle East to want to go and live in Adelaide.
Yeah, that's very, very true. You're right. Yeah, maybe where the reform needs to be made is actually the reform of the last major reform, which is the GST. Yep. All right, a public high school, Williama High School in Broken Hill, New South Wales, will need to be completely torn down and rebuilt after a shocking mold infestation spread throughout the entire campus, potentially through the air conditioning system we're hearing today. To get to such an extensive mold outbreak, this is surely a concern for parents. And boy, oh boy, mate, you know, you'd expect that someone would have kept an eye on the health of the building.
Yeah. I started school at the local primary school up the road, and when I got to about fifth class, mum and dad put us in the Catholic school. Two things I noticed. Going from the local public school back in the 70s to the Catholic school was chalk and cheese. The Catholic school buildings were run down. They were decrepit. They were just horrible. Right. I was in a post-war built primary school that back in 1977 or whenever it was actually still reasonably new. I go past that school now and nothing's changed. Mm. And here we are in 2024 and it's the same classrooms that the kids that I was in 77, the same playground is there, the same, nothing has changed. Funnily enough, the Catholic school I speak of, it's had a total overhaul. Something is wrong in the funding model of the way the bureaucracy maintains and cares for schools. And I think it comes down to simply that, you know, that we've got so many people now overlooking and overseeing public infrastructure that we chew up too much of the money in that, in the oversight of it, and not enough money in the actual maintenance. So that poor old school in Broken Hill, I think you'd probably find it's one of many. It's just lucky that there were people who actually had the technical capability to go and have a look and say there's a real problem here.
Yeah. We're going to leave the best story to last, but I want to take a little bit of a news break, just a 30-second break, and we'll come back and talk about this incredibly brave principal from King's School right after this on TNT.
And here's the news. Extra, extra. TNT Radio News.
Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. The US Justice Department has shattered historical precedent after jailing one of Donald Trump's former presidential advisers for ignoring a congressional subpoena.
They can put me in prison. They can put you in prison. Make no mistake about that.
As many world leaders congratulate Russian President Vladimir Putin on his historic re-election, the reaction in the West has been filled with anger and frustration. And Israeli tanks and soldiers have stormed the Al-Shifa Hospital in northern Gaza.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365. We never stop sifting fact from fiction, misinformation from the truth. From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad. Listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Okay, we left the best to last with Jason Morrison. The headmaster of the elite private King School in Sydney, Tony George, has blasted recent criticism against boys' schools in a scathing article in which he says wokeness has led to an age of victimhood. He says government single-sex schools have seemed to avoid criticism, as have single-sex girls' schools, and the underlying agenda against the straw man of white privileged males has fueled the creation of the term toxic masculinity and the religious fervour it subsequently generates. The concept of identity abuse, where individuals are misrepresented and objectified for sensationalism, is a disturbing trend, with children attending non-government schools being increasingly targeted and ridiculed. Wow. Have single-sex girls been unfairly criticised, do you think?
Relentlessly, relentlessly. Total declaration on this, Chris, my children go to that school.
Right.
And it's funny, when I tell people that, you get really one of two reactions. You usually get the, oh, you really think it's what you want to send your kids, your sons to an all-boys school? And the second one is this sort of like, hoity-toity reaction. Oh, you must be rich. Well, I'm not rich. You know the realities of it, mate. Not these days, not far from it. And in terms of, do I want to send my kids to an all-boys school? It's a choice we've made for a whole lot of reasons. But the headmaster's point here, fundamentally, and I woke up this morning, I saw this headline, I thought, oh, geez, did he have to put us in the news? That was my first reaction.
Right.
But I've read his whole piece, It's brilliant. And people who are reading it are realizing this, because he's basically saying that the inference all the time is an all-boys school is just a ticking time bomb for toxic masculinity. And the assumption is that where there are lots of men together, you'll naturally get bad reactions and bad behaviors, particularly with respect to women. I call bullshit on that. I agree. Always thought it. My kids will be shaped by their parents. They will be educated by their school, and the school will not interfere in the values that we have chosen to instill on our children. Mm. That's the upside of that school. And that's actually why when I read what he's had to say, I look and I say, thank God, mate, you're prepared to say this in an era that not many people will.
Yeah.
Because it is, you know, I mean,
he has made himself a target now.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm so glad he has, because someone's got to stand up and say this stuff. And I'm glad that he has, and especially from a high-profile school such as King's. But they will come after him now, mate. Oh, yeah. They will start to cancel him.
Yeah. I dropped the kids off this morning, and there were cameras out the front, and there were photographers. And, you know, and that's what happens. And unfortunately, some things do need to be said every now and then. It's a debating point as to whether it needs to be the headmaster of the school that says it, because, you know, I'm sure there'd be a lot of people who send their kids there that would probably prefer that the school stays out of the fight. But it's an important fight, and it's a fight that you have every day on your show, that your listeners tune into you to hear, had, and that is that it is possible every now and then to not enjoy and want to placate the zeitgeist that seems to be pumped out all the time now, that single-sex education for just boys or just girls is terrible. And look, how often do you ever hear it said that a girls' school should be inviting boys in too? It's never said. A girls' school, just a girls' school, is sort of seen as something special. But for some reason, any school that just has boys educated, and this is a school that's 100-something years old.
Yeah.
And one of the, I think it's one of the oldest, or maybe the original private school in Australia, who knows, and who cares actually, but it happens to have that choice about education because it thinks that men, boys need to be educated slightly differently to the way girls and boys can be educated.
And this is undoubtedly the motivation behind what's happening at Cranbrook and also what's happening at Newington. And let's not beat around the bush. I think that there's a big push on for this exact reason, which is why I'm so glad that I saw what he wrote. But when it comes to the literature on how to teach boys and girls, mate, if you get stuck into the teaching literature, they will tell you boys in particular are very easily distracted, and very easily distracted if they are prone to show off. That tells me I don't want my boys, my sons, in a classroom with girls because they are prone to show off. Secondly, boys are very visual. You've got to actually put things on the board, where with girls, they can do all of their mental arithmetic and mental summation. They do it all in their head. They learn differently to boys. So there's a really good reason within the literature to have them separated.
Yeah. And look, you know, once again, in an era where people don't take responsibility for things that go on, if my sons turn out to be little toxic men, that's my fault.
Yeah.
It ain't the school's fault. That's my fault.
Well said.
And you know, and I think they are very lucky to be able to go to a school that has all the great facilities and resources there, and they're lucky to be there because we've made choices in the way we live our lives in order to apportion a large chunk of the household budget to paying to their education. I know not everyone can do that, but you've got to look at the stats. In Australia, something like 40% of children are being educated outside of state schools now. There was an ABS statistic recently. Right. That's stunning. Yeah. There's got to be a message in that. Now, they're not all going to flash schools like King's or whatever one you want to throw around, or Geelong Grammar or whatever, but they're making decisions to get out of the government schools because they actually want to be able to be in control of the sort of values that their kids are subjected to. And that's a choice that people shouldn't feel bad making.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that's the sort of commonality through all of this, is that we have decided that people who choose to send their kids to these schools, that they're actually doing a destructive thing to their kids. And, you know, if that's what people think, you know, up yours. I don't care what you think, because my decision's been made for what I think are the right reasons for
our family. And that's all you've got to worry about. Another Jason has just sent me an email saying, so glad to hear Jason Morrison. Just like you, Chris, he's not gagged anymore. Love it. Good on you, Jason. Thank you. And Jason Morrison, thank you so much for your time.
Good on you, mate. Nice to see you. See you,
good analysis from Jason Morrison once again. Good to have him on the program. Running a little bit late for Alex, but it's better we get to him anyway, because he's been waiting patiently online. From techadvice.life, Alex Zaharoff-Reut, welcome.
Smithy, great to be here.
Fantastic to have you here. Now, let's get straight into this. Let's talk televisions. LG has launched their new range of 2024 TVs.
Yes. Now, a couple of the models are cheaper, actually, than last year. This is the 55 and 65-inch models from their QNED TVs. QNED stands for Quantum Nano Emitting Diode. That's an LCD TV where all the little dots have little special lights behind them to give a better picture than the traditional LCDs that required backlights in the back and couldn't do proper dimming. They're cheaper than the OLEDs, which is the organic light emitting diodes, which give you the best picture of all. And the 65-inch models are 25% cheaper than last year. So for some reason, we're seeing some deflation there, which is a bit unusual. But LG does have 98-inch QNED TVs and 97-inch OLED TVs, which obviously will cost a bomb if you want those, but they're the biggest ones. And I did record actually the entire presentation as I was talking to you about it last week. And you could see the difference between a 77-inch TV and the 97-inch. I mean, those 20 inches make a huge difference. You need a bigger room for that sort of TV. And, you know, it used to be that people were getting 40-inch TVs, you know, 20 years ago, they were $20,000. I mean, you can go into Aldi and some of those stores and they're $200 or $300. But the bigger TVs now are they're no longer the 65 or 75. Now you're getting close to 100, and just the quality is incredible. Now, as I said, they have these bigger sizes. They have a bunch of clever AI features to make the picture sharper and brighter and able to be changing its brightness depending on the room. They can be brighter even if there's sunlight in the room. And these TVs, as we sort of previewed a little bit last week, we're not really supposed to have done that, but they've got 5 years of OS upgradability like your smartphone. So every year you'll get the newest features, whatever they are, for the next 5 years.
And so, finally, what would that mean? Yeah. What kind of things would we upgrade? How does this work?
Sure. Well, I mean, one example is that the TVs, they've got these different chips inside. So one of them is called the Alpha 11. That's their latest chip. And this particular model can deliver four separate screens at the same time. The lower ones, the 8 and the 9, can do two pictures side by side. You can have your monitor from your laptop on one side, and on the other side, you can have live TV. With the more powerful chips, you can have the four screens, and this means you can have three or four different sports matches or different angles at the same time. So there'll be newer apps that you can download, new features yet to be unveiled and unleashed that normally you'd have to buy a whole new TV for. You know, normally when you buy a TV, it might have some security updates, but you won't get the entirely new operating system that'll have some new apps, new features, new capabilities. You'll have to, you know, buy the new TV and put the old one in a different room or sell it. But this means that next year when they launch a new TV that has whatever the new feature might be, you'll be able to upgrade and get that particular feature too. One of the ways they're doing this is they're sort of locking the processor for the next 2 or 3 years. So it's not that next year's models will have an A12 or more advanced processor. Their process is so advanced, the newest one, that they can sort of keep that in place for a couple of years, at least 2 or 3 years, and more easily upgrade the operating system without causing anybody to be left behind. And the operating system upgrade feature will be extended back for the last couple of years to some select models. So they won't get the full 5 years. They'll get a couple of extra years. And eventually they will have to go to a newer processor, and there will be things that a 2027 TV can do that a 2024 TV can't do. But they're just trying to preserve your investment, because you're going to spend $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 more, you know, on some of these TVs. And you don't want it to feel like that, oh, next year there's a new model and your one's now the old one and can't do all the cool things.
Exactly. Okay. Now, I never thought that on a Cyber Wednesday segment we'd talk about the latest hairdryers, but we are we?
Well, we are. And look, it's because it's from Dyson. And Dyson's technology is a bit like the iPhone of the appliance world. So they've got air purifiers and heaters and coolers, but their supersonic dryer was a big hit when it came out. But the newest one is called the Supersonic Neural. Now, this one actually protects your scalp hair. If you've ever held a hair dryer to your hair, you know it can get quite hot. And heat damages hair. You know, women are always using all sorts of things to curl the hair and to straighten the hair, and you know that they have to use all sorts of special shampoos and conditioners to try and nourish the hair. But if you don't overheat the hair in the first place, you're going to have much healthier hair. So this particular hair dryer, when you move it closer to your head and move it further away, it maintains a 55 degree temperature. So even if you move it out here or you move it closer, it'll get cooler and hotter depending on how far away the hair dryer is. So that's happening on demand, on the fly. Also, there are a whole stack of different attachments. Now, if you have an iPhone, on the back of the iPhone, you have the MagSafe, and you can put different attachments, and the iPhone knows what attachments you put on, like a wallet or different things. Well, on the Neural, you can have attachments for giving you a very fine bit of hair. You can have these larger attachments for much longer, curlier hair, and the attachments can have different settings for how they're blowing air out and the temperature, and they're magnetic. And so when you attach one of these attachments on, the hairdryer automatically knows what attachment you put on, and it can change the drying accordingly. Now on the back, you've got three different lights. The lights change depending on how close the hairdryer is and how hot it is. And also if you put the hairdryer down, there's an accelerometer inside that knows the hairdryer has been put down.
And so an accelerometer?
An accelerometer, like in your phone, where it knows what direction the phone is going in. The same technology is in the hairdryer. So when you put the hairdryer down, the accelerometer knows that, hey, it's not being held up and drying. It's actually flat on the table. And so it puts the hairdryer into a low power, quiet mode. You don't have to turn it off. You can put it down. It doesn't blow everything off the table. You don't have to fiddle with it. You put it down, you do whatever you've got to do. You pick it up and bang, it's back at full power again. Now it's $749. So it's like iPhone priced. It's iPhone priced. But it's the most advanced hairdryer I've ever seen. And the previous one was something like $500 anyway. So it's not as if Dyson stuff. I mean, if you want to get a $20 hairdryer, you can do that from Kmart. No problem at all. But you won't have all these attachments and things. And for people whose business it is to do this, for people who've got to be on TV or have to forever style their hair, and women as well who do a lot of work in styling their hair, this can save a lot of time, save a lot of damage from happening to the hair, and it pays for itself in those particular regards. So look, yes, this is the iPhone of hair dryers, but it won't even go on sale till April 11. So it's not even on the market yet, but it's coming very soon. You can type Supersonic Neural into YouTube and see a couple of videos, and it's the most, I mean, the only thing it doesn't do is phone calls. That's about it. It's pretty amazing.
It'll make you a cup of coffee. I like it.
Yeah, yeah. Not
all
yet.
Right,
yeah.
Talking about things that make you a cup of coffee, smart homes. It came on to, you know, everyone likes to think that they could turn their homes into a smart home. And I know people, friends of mine, who have really done that. They've gone well over the top. Every light's on their mobile phone, et cetera, et cetera. Things start when they're scheduled, et cetera. What's that market like? What kind of market is it? How big is it?
Well, it's set to crack $2.5 billion, according to Telsyte, an emerging technology research firm. And this is driven by AI, by energy savings, and by security. So this market actually is just at the cusp of growing. All the technologies that people have purchased, they're almost, in some ways, almost out of date. They're all about to be superseded by even smarter technology that can talk back to you, that can give you lots of information about how energy efficient your home is. And so this connected devices in the home is just going to continue growing. And even though there's going to be we're going through economic headwinds right now, there's 6.7 million smart homes that now have at least one smart home product. But this market is expected to grow to $5.1 billion by 2027. So this is and there'll be things like smart batteries, smart appliances, various smart services. You'll be able to get subscriptions to products, so you won't necessarily have to buy them. There'll be lots of robots and electric vehicles and renewables. There's in-home AI. So this whole thing about your home being something you can talk to and get it to do things by talking to it. You know, you don't have to push buttons on your phone anymore. You just say, hey, change the temperature to this, change the setting to that, close the blinds, open the thing up. So start the washing at 9 p.m. when the energy is cheaper. There's going to be, there are 23.8 connected devices in the home right now and 16.1 non-smart devices, but this is obviously going to grow, and there's going to be smart spaces for hybrid work because that's not going to go away. And security and home care systems are putting all our smart devices to work. So this whole smart home, if you think people have been doing this, it's all about to go through yet another cycle of upgrades and improvements, and people are going to love it.
Holly, one of our viewers, says, my house is very smart. When the electricity goes out, I can use a key to get in. Fantastic, Holly. Modern technology. I love it. This, of course, dovetails into the interview you did on Saturday night on your show on TNT with the futurist, right?
Yeah, Steve Sammartino. We had a really great chat, about 50 minutes, and we spoke about those five trends that were on the Samsung side of the fence, which included all the same sort of topics, AI and EVs and soft robotics. And so, you know, we spoke about a lot more than that besides and talked about the future of AI. So if you want to have a look in more detail about this with Australia's top futurist and myself talking with him, then you can go to either tntradio.live, look for my show, or I've got a link to it at the very top of my page, at techadvice.life, which links straight to the Podbean podcast that TNT Radio has. And it was a really good conversation.
Kelly says, I'd rather go bald than buy a $700 hairdryer. There you go. He's on my side. Tell us about the world's strongest AI chips.
Yes, well, NVIDIA, the company that makes the Hopper H100, the Grace Hopper chip, and Grace Hopper is the name of the lady that discovered the term bug, because they had these mechanical computers and back, you know, 50, 70 years ago, and there was something going wrong, and they looked inside and there was a cricket stuck in one of the mechanisms, and that's why they call computer bugs bugs. And I remember telling Dr. Carl Krasilnitsy, and no one seemed to figure this out, but Grace Hopper sounds very much like Grasshopper. So it's quite funny. It's like Dr. Death and all those things. She had a name that was fabulous. Anyway, NVIDIA makes the chip called the H100. H stands for Hopper. And this is the chip that OpenAI and all the other AI companies are using in their thousands to do all the generative AI that we have today. And they've just launched a new platform called Blackwell. Now, this is named after a mathematician called David Harold Blackwell. And this chip offers a massive boost compared to these H100 chips. Now, they won't come out until the end of the year, but they're from 7 to 30 times faster, but they consume about 25 times less power. And they were showing on stage, Jensen Huang, the CEO, was showing that there's this configuration, this rack of all the different chips that you can just pull out of the data center that has the H100 chips, and you can pop in a rack with these new B200 chips, which is so you don't have to change anything else, just pull the old ones out, put the new ones in, and you're getting, you know, from 7 to 30 times more power. So all this incredible AI stuff that we've seen is just about to be supercharged to even greater levels. And, you know, this is only 2024. I mean, just imagine how we're going to be like in 2030. And on stage, he had seven different robots from seven different companies, not including Elon Musk, who's not part of this consortium. And these robots were being powered by a new chip from NVIDIA as well. And they could do all sorts of work that we would expect to see from the C-3POs from Star Wars. So these robots will be in our homes before the end of the decade. It's all moving really fast. I just hope we can afford to buy it and make them in the quantities that we need to keep everyone worldwide happy.
Talking about fast, I've got a fast get to a commercial break. Let's do that right now on TNT.
People might tell you that Lyme doesn't kill people, but we are losing people. People disappear from their lives.
One of the scariest things that I had to deal with was memory loss. Not just like I don't remember what I did last week, but like I forgot all the words to my own songs. I remember going to my primary care physician and he was like, you are 100% healthy. There's nothing wrong with you. And my response was, that's impossible. I'm dying.
I wasn't working. So I had all of these hospital bills. We had to move out of our home and move into my parents' basement.
I just wish I could have truly been present in those big moments. You know, when she took her first steps or, you know, her first day of preschool. Lyme is such a thief and it goes undetected because no one is looking for it.
For more information and prevention tips, go to projectlyme.org.
Most people are unaware that bad bacteria can grow quickly in food that's stored, prepped, or cooked incorrectly, and that can lead to food poisoning. To avoid bad bacteria, always make sure your hands and cooking utensils are clean. Keep raw meat and chicken away from food that won't be cooked. Run your fridge at or below 5 degrees Celsius and use a meat thermometer to ensure your meat's being cooked to at least 75 degrees Celsius. For more tips on keeping bad bacteria at bay, visit foodsafety.asn.au.
Where the story goes, we follow. Chris Smith on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
All right, Alex Zaharoff-Reut, we've got about 5 or 6 minutes to go. Tell me about this partnership between Google and Apple. Apple doesn't usually do this stuff.
Yeah, look, Apple has worked with Google in the past in the sense that the Google search engine is the default search engine on iPhones, and Google now pays Apple some tens of billions of dollars every year for that privilege, because of course Apple could go with Microsoft or other players out there. And there's talk that it's wanted to do its own search engine for years. But Apple is going to do a huge AI push this year. We've spoken about it several times already. And in fact, this week there was the Apple MM1 engine, AI engine, that has been announced in sort of a white paper. And we don't know too much about it other than Apple has now got its own engine. But there's been also these conflicting reports this week from Bloomberg and others that Apple is going to join forces with Google and use Google's Gemini generative AI to do a lot of the AI work that, you know, people will talk to Siri and it will give you all these answers, and it will be generated by this Google Gemini. Now, this will give Apple presumably the ability to say, well, if there's any weird answers that's come from Google, and Apple is still going to be able to work on its own AI stuff in the background. But look, they were also supposed to be in heavy negotiations with OpenAI as well, but Apple doesn't really want to give Microsoft too much credibility because OpenAI is backed by Microsoft. So it's sort of stuck between a rock and a hard place. Everything's moving so fast, so exponentially, that Apple has to partner with somebody. They've got to do AI this year. They can't not do it. Yeah.
It's bizarre, Alex. When you think about it, when you think about the major changes to technology, Apple has always been at the top or roundabout at the top. Yeah. This has left them behind, hasn't it?
It certainly has. And one of the reasons why is because Steve Jobs is no longer there. I mean, Steve Jobs said very plainly that Tim Cook is a product person, is not a product person. He's like the financial person.
Yeah.
And so although under his watch we've had the AirPods, we've had the watch, we've had all sorts of things, you know, Steve Jobs would never have let Siri sort of, you know, not advance very much in the 10, 11, 12 years since we've had it. He would have been right at the forefront. So Apple has spent nearly $1 billion. And look, they're going to wow us in about 11 weeks' time at WWDC. But they may have to do some of these deals with people like Google to just be in the game whilst they're rapidly catching up in the background. And they can always launch something of their own next year. But I think we'll be surprised. A lot of this stuff is just noise before the main event, which is WWDC, the middle of the year.
Okay, I've always been worried that the development of AI will lead to far greater cyber attacks than what we have ever witnessed. But there's some evidence that suggests the opposite might happen.
Well, 41% of Australian IT decision makers believe the use of AI by deploying advanced threat detection, you know, automated response mechanisms and predictive analytics will help them protect their organization from cyber attacks. And 94% of these decision makers believe that information sharing would benefit their organization. So there is a call for this information sharing and best practices sharing about data breaches between organizations and businesses and law enforcement and the government. And I mean, we do have to work together. I mean, the bad guys are often working together against us, and there's more of us than there are of the bad guys. So, you know, 2 in 5 think that working together would help in aiding their organization detect threats earlier. Yeah, I certainly hope they're right too, but there's a lot more work that needs to be done on our side, on the good side against the bad side.
Okay, very quickly, those new Microsoft PCs you've been talking about, you spoke about this last week, I think it was. How far are they away?
Look, it's going to be on Friday, our time, that they'll be launched. So if you're thinking of buying a Windows PC, wait for these ones to come out first. You'll be able to go to news.google.com and see, and any of the news websites, and there'll be plenty of information about those there.
And what have you heard about their AI capabilities?
Well, they're going to be powered by OpenAI, the ChatGPT. Microsoft's calling it Copilot.
Right.
So it's going to be lots of features. I mean, there'll be preview of how the next version of Windows due later this year, the update to Windows 11, is going to add all these AI features right into Windows. They want to beat Apple to the punch on having AI everywhere. They've been doing a lot of work in that regard. And speaking of Apple, we should hear, hopefully by this show next week, about new iPads as well. They've been delayed. And I mean, probably the biggest thing we're going to see is a 12.9-inch iPad, but in the iPad Air price range. So not the cheapest, not the most expensive. They're going to bring the bigger iPad down to a cheaper price. We're yet to see that. It's been predicted since September, October last year. It hasn't happened.
That's a big iPad, 12 inches.
Well, they've got one already, the iPad Pro. I mean, it's the same size as the MacBook Air. So a MacBook Air has a 13-inch screen, so your standard 13-inch laptop. But most iPads are 11 inches or even 10 inches. And if you wanted to get the bigger iPad because you wanted a bigger canvas, I mean, there's even talk of a 15-inch iPad, an even bigger one still. Samsung has a bigger one like that. They've got a nice big widescreen one. And this is a canvas to, you know, do documents, to draw, to play board games. I mean, the bigger a screen you have, until we have holographic projection into the air, the bigger the screen you have, the more things you can do at the same time. So, you know, hopefully by this time next week, we will have new iPads and we'll be able to talk about what Microsoft launched with these new Surface PCs. So, you know, and the thing is, just because I launch it this Friday doesn't mean it'll be available to buy. It'll probably be still 3 or 4 more weeks to buy. So, you know, if you're desperate for a new PC, go and get one. But if you can wait, see what is on offer, it will likely change the game.
And very, very quickly, you're in Thailand next week.
Yes, Lenovo is launching a whole stack of new technology. They do everything from pocket to the cloud, like I mentioned last week. And so I'll be in Bangkok at the launch. So I'll be joining you from some venue somewhere there, showing whatever it is, the new things that were launched. So I'll see you from Thailand next week.
That'll be fun. You'll be on a sun lounge right next to the pool, no doubt. So we'll be hearing the waves lapping against the side of the pool. Thank you so much for your time, Alex. Fantastic. We'll direct our listeners and watchers to techadvice.life. Thank you, mate.
Bye-bye.
Good on you. Alex Zaharoff-Royt, who you can see on a Saturday night, Australian time, on TNT. I've run out of time. I'll leave you in the capable hands of Sonia Poulton, who comes out of London for you. And we'll be back at the same time tomorrow. This is Chris Smith.